We have some probing questions to ask about Ray Rice and the NFL, and you will provide the answers.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Oh, we have a lot to talk about today on The Line of Fire, and I can't wait to get your feedback, your input about the Ray Rice situation. Even those who don't know about it will want to weigh in because it is an issue of domestic violence and is an issue of the NFL waffling on some issues. And it raises a lot of larger issues for me. And of course, I want to probe them with you and talk about it. 866-348-7884. You may be ready to weigh in, but I want to lay things out first. You can wait a moment to call. A few very important programming notes first. Tomorrow, the 13th anniversary of the 9/11 tragedy, and I have specially prepared a broadcast for tomorrow. I believe it will touch you. I believe it will stir your heart. I believe it will bring you hope. So make sure to tune in, and any part of the broadcast you miss, you can catch the whole thing later. There will be one special hour, all right? Even for those getting 2 hours of broadcasting, there will be one special hour that has been prepared, and you can listen to it at AskDrBrown.org. Click on the latest audio to get that later today if you miss any of the show. Also, Friday, the first half hour of the broadcast, I will be speaking with David Limbaugh. He is a best-selling author, a lawyer. You know his brother, Rush. And David has written a book. I'm going to be reading it, God willing, in flight to California tonight. Eager to get into it. My friend Frank Turek told me it's a terrific book. It's Jesus on Trial, How a Lawyer Defends the reliability of the gospel. So David will be joining us. And then I've been burdened about this for some time, and last night I finally felt it was time to write. So I wrote an open letter to Joel and Victoria Osteen. It's called An Appeal to Joel and Victoria Osteen. Some other sites may have posted it as an open letter. And I begin by saying, Dear Joel and Victoria, I hope and pray that you read this letter and that you take to heart the things I'm sharing. I wrote as a friend wanting to help, not an enemy wanting to hurt. And everything I write out of love for God, love for you, and love for the church and the world. That's my heart in writing what I wrote. God knows that. And I interact directly with Joel and Victoria. You say, well, did you reach out to them first privately? I have no contact with them and no access to them. Anytime we have the ability to do that, we try. But if you remember, with all my efforts to reach out to John MacArthur, I was never able to sit with him or speak with him directly in any way. And in any case, this is written with grace, number one. But number two, it's dealing with public issues. You don't have to, if you're a local pastor and I say something on the radio that you differ with, let's say you're a local pastor in the Bronx and I say something you differ with and you know some of your folks have heard it in your congregation and you want to say, hey, I listen to Dr. Brown, too. I agree with a lot of what he says, but, you know, I think he's wrong here. And let me tell you why. You don't have to contact me and follow Matthew 18. I haven't sinned against you. Matthew 18 is for personal sin issues. Still, I always, if I have an opportunity to reach out, there's a Twitter feed that Joel Osteen has with several million followers, and Victoria Osteen has several hundred thousand followers. So I sent it to them and said, hey, would you please read this? And it's been shared already. Well, just on one website alone in a few hours, about 23,000 times. So I do pray and hope they'll get to them, but please read it. I believe it's a very important perspective. Please read it and go to AskDrBrown.org, click on latest article. Okay, we come back. I'll set the stage about the Ray Rice incident, and I want to talk to you about how the NFL has handled it. Get your take. 866-348-7884.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Hey, friends, welcome back to The Line of Fire broadcast, 866-34-TRUTH. It's Wednesday, Worldview Wednesday. We often focus on moral, cultural issues in particular. Yesterday, Tuesday, we focused on teaching theology-related issues, went through the scriptures about the fear of the Lord. Thursday is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, but this week we'll have an exclusive focus on the 13th anniversary of 9/11. But there's something in the news that I think is relevant. This is not conservative talk radio, and it's not sports radio, for sure. And I have to say, sometimes just as I'm driving or to unwind a little bit or to kill a few minutes, I'll put on sports talk radio. Maybe I'm curious about a score or something like that. But it always amazes me that everybody gets so worked up about things that are of no eternal significance. You know what I'm saying? I mean, the passion and the intensity and the anger and the exhilaration and it always interests me. And I thought, hey, that's what they're doing. I mean, that's their thing, sports talk radio, and that's what they do. But I think, well, I'm not called to do that. And what I'm called to do is to have a different impact. So let each one do what they feel they're supposed to do. But this is not sports talk radio. With that in mind, we're going to talk about a sports issue. Ray Rice is one of the best running backs in the Baltimore in the NFL. And the Baltimore Ravens 2 years ago won the Super Bowl, which is arguably the biggest sports event in America every year. And Ray Rice was in an elevator with his then fiance, who is now his wife. And what you see is there looks like they're having some kind of argument when they get on the elevator. When they get off the elevator, she's unconscious and he drags her out. Someone comes up from the hotel staff, and when she's drunk, right, he doesn't respond. Well, what happened is they got into an argument, and he punched her in the face and knocked her out. Now, remember, he's an NFL player. He is an athlete. He's a strong, tough man. He threw one quick punch, knocked her out, and as video now shows, she bangs her head on the hotel railing. Well, how is the NFL going to handle this? They met Roger Goodell, who is the commissioner of the NFL. What does he make, $20 million a year or something? At least $20 million a year. That's how big the NFL is. And he meets with them. They're married now, so obviously they want to stay together and be together. And that's positive. That's redemptive. And they seem to take seriously the issues. And he did say what happened. He did say that he struck her. And the NFL said, okay, 2-game suspension. Well, that caused a lot of outrage. 2-game suspension? Are you kidding me? There was one coach who made a horrific comment. He made it in jest, but a horrific comment that you put all the gays on an island and nuke the island. I mean, a horrific comment. And he got a 3-game suspension. And you can have a drug violation and get, even if it's a first-time offense and you say, I don't even know how it happened, you're going to get a bigger suspension than that. But here, he knocked his fiance out with a punch in the elevator. That's domestic violence. She could easily take him to court, press charges, which she didn't do. And he gets a 2-game suspension. So some people said, well, I heard some athletes saying, the NFL really doesn't have a paradigm for this. In other words, they had to kind of play it by ear. Because everything else, it's fixed. You do certain things, here's a suspension. You make a comment against the referees and you're a coach. Here's the fine. And they have play with it, but he was saying, hey, we don't really have a paradigm for this. Well, there is a whole lot of domestic violence that goes on with NFL players. It's happened over the years. Unfortunately, some players, regardless of skin color or background, some players have a bit of a thug background, and they have an outlet for their violence within the parameters of the NFL, and some of them have been violent outside of the NFL. But otherwise, the players understand the importance of obeying the law, and there was outrage over the fact that there was a 2-game suspension. And I thought, okay, I appreciate the fact that Ray Rice and his then-fiancée, now wife, want to stay together. that they spoke about things in a contrite way and that he did say that he punched her in the face and he knocked her out. He did say that. Now, the only video that any of us saw was the one showing them getting in the elevator and then him dragging her out of the elevator. There was no video of her getting struck in the elevator. Well, that has now come out. And as a result of it coming out, the Baltimore Ravens immediately released him. They removed his stuff from his locker, removed his name, everything, kind of washed their hands of him. And by the way, when he was playing in preseason practice and things like that, he was getting cheered by the fans. And was he getting cheered because he knocked out his fiance? I hope not. Was getting cheered because they said, "Hey, Ray, we stand with you. We love you. We stand with you." Obviously, he's a good player. They like him on the team. It helps them win. But was that America saying, "Hey, we're forgiving people. If she's forgiving you, we forgive you"? I would hope it was more of that. Americans tend to do that. They do want to show support if someone's messed up and is contrite about it. They want to say, "Hey, we're standing with you." And thankfully, there was not a death or anything like that that came out of there, or lasting damage to Janae, to his wife. But now that this has come out, he's been suspended indefinitely. And the NFL has taken strong action. Some sources say the NFL had this video the whole time. They had access to it. Others say they never asked for it and it was available. NFL is saying we never knew it existed. What I'm wondering about is, okay, the video is violent, but that's what we knew happened. He's dragging out an unconscious woman, and she's laying there unconscious. She didn't just perk up 10 seconds later. She got knocked out. I wasn't surprised when I saw the second video. It's exactly what I pictured. He swings. It's a quick punch. She's, you know, she comes at him, and they're having an altercation, an argument. She comes at him, and, you know, look, she's not going to hurt him. Even if she hurts him a little bit, scratches him, he's a tough NFL player. Worst thing he could do is just grab her hands and stop her, subdue her, you know, just stop. Maybe he'd hurt her a little bit doing it, squeeze her arms, but, and that would have been the worst should have happened. Totally inexcusable that he punches her in the face. But that's what I assumed happened from the start. Now it's almost like it's out. The NFL has to do something about it. And there are calls for his resignation, Roger Goodell's resignation. So I want to ask you, how the NFL should have handled this, what they've done right, what they've done wrong. How much of an example do you make of Ray Rice because of domestic violence? If he is repentant and if his wife is saying to the media, "You're destroying our lives. We wanted to move on. You're destroying our lives now with this. What are you doing?" Should there be more leniency? How should we look at this? Does Ray Rice have a future in the NFL? Some players are saying he should be out for life. There's no place for domestic violence. 866-34-TRUTH. Before we go to your calls, first, clip number one. This is Roger Goodell saying, "We asked for the video." Clip number one.
"Well, we had not seen any videotape of what occurred in the elevator. We assumed that there was a video. We asked for video. We asked for anything that was pertinent. But we were never granted that opportunity."
All right. I have no business calling Roger Goodell a liar, okay? I don't know the man personally. I've not followed carefully his career. So I'm going to take him at his word. I simply want to say I find it hard to believe. The NFL, with all of its power, with all of its might, with all of its finances, the fact that some gossip column, what is it, TMZ.com, some media gossip site online could get the video and release it. And again, from what I've read, police saying it was available. I just have a hard time believing that. I'm not calling him a liar. I'm in a quandary because I'm not calling him a liar, but I have a very hard time believing that. Mike Wise from the Washington Post Sports says Goodell should be fired. This is clip number two. Mike Wise of Washington Post Sports.
"My inbox today was filled with a lot of emails from women, some of whom were in abusive relationships, some of whom just cannot deal with the notion that this happened and there was nothing done before this video came out from TMZ. And they said they're not patronizing the league anymore. Roger Goodell has got to go."
All right. Now, I want to get your calls, but I don't want to have to interrupt you on the air. So let's wait till we get into the next segment. Yolanda, Eugene, Angela, you will be up first, all right? And I will get to as many calls as possible. In my view, the video actually changes nothing, because this is what I thought happened from the start. I mean, he slugs his wife, his fiance then, and she's unconscious. I mean, she is dragged out of the elevator unconscious. And he obviously wouldn't have done it if other people were around looking. It was in the so-called privacy of the elevator in the heat of the moment. I'm not condemning him. I would like to see this handled in a way that is redemptive and that draws a real focus to the issue of domestic violence. Absolutely. Absolutely. Was it mishandled by the league? Without question. My view, how should we move forward is a bigger question. All right, stay right there. And as soon as we come back, straight to your calls.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
We're talking about the Ray Rice incident, how the NFL handled it, how it should be handled moving forward, what they did right, what they did wrong, and you get to give us the answers to these important questions. Now, 866-34-TRUTH, we start with Yolanda in Laurel, Maryland. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hi, good afternoon, Dr. Brown. I just wanted to say that this is something, regardless of how the NFL has handled it, this is something that has been going on. I am a domestic violence survivor myself, and women tend to feel we don't speak out or we don't report things because whether they're our boyfriends or husbands or significant others, we don't say anything. This has probably been going on for a while, and the exposure, there was times for him to possibly get it together, but the exposure, whether it was a gossip columnist or whatever was going on, I believe somebody was praying for this couple for a long time, and then it's just exposed. And now we have this out here, and everybody's outraged about what the NFL did, you know, what they're doing. My thing is, he got a $25 million check, he's not hurting, but at the end of the day, it's his family. There is hurting people hurt people. And I have come to learn that for sure. And the one thing that all I can say is that this goes way deeper than what we have seen. This lady has been dealing with this probably for a while. And he just got caught up in it, and she got caught up in it, and she doesn't want anybody to know about it. And she's probably feeling embarrassed, and whomever sold it to the tabloids, that's neither here nor there. This is something systematic, and I'm a person, I was in the church, I'm still in the church, and I was getting my head rocked by, and I'm a Christian now, and I was putting up with that, but that was my self-esteem, that was my low self-worth, that was something within me that I was drawing this type of person. I was very needy. There are things that we don't know about people before we marry them, before we get involved with them. The guy that I was involved with, when I found out later on, he came from an alcoholic home. He couldn't control what was going there. So he began to control everything that I was doing. And anytime I got out of line, well, there I was getting battered around. Finally, I just had enough. And it was going to get down to the point where one of us was going to go out of here. And I had told him that, and it wasn't going to be me. I had to get out of that situation. I had to. It just got to the point. And I'm a single parent. And I just got involved with somebody who had issues that I didn't even pray and ask God, should I even be involved with them? Because of my own, I drew this type of neediness to me, some I wanted to take care of, and then there I was involved with somebody that I really shouldn't have been tied up. Now, I don't know if that's their situation or not, but all I'm saying is that I have refrained from responding to things on Facebook and seeing people, you know, getting all upset. But at the end of the day, I'm looking, and I say, you know what? I've been in her shoes. I've been around the type of man that whatever his explosive temper was, I've been on behind the closed doors. This is something that's been going on for a while.
Yeah.
And it just got exposed. And so we're all up in the air about it. But this is some real life stuff that's happening every day.
It is. Hey, Yolanda.
Every day. And people need to know. Women need to know. And I know men, not just about women, I know men are getting physically abused and being battered around by women.
Yeah, hey, let me just jump in and say first, thank you for calling, and thank you for your courage to stand. And if you find yourself in a situation like this, including if you're the man that's guilty of violence, get help. Get your situation. I don't mean put it on the internet, but reach out for help. Don't just let the thing go on, because it could get even worse. And in many cases, it's way bad enough already. 866-34-TRUTH. Remember, friends, that I will be covering this subject now for the next 35 minutes. Even if you will be losing me on your local radio station, stay on hold and we'll get your call in our next segment if we don't get to you now. And you can call in even when you're not hearing us on the radio. If we're live, you can call in 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Eugene in Queens, New York. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Yes, Mike. How are you?
Doing well. Thank you.
Okay, good, good. I just want to come in real quick. Thanks for taking the call. One, I want to say that, you know, start off with God moves in mysterious ways, number one. And number two, it's really no winners in this situation with something of this magnitude and gravity. And it's a case of, in my opinion, to whom much is given, much is required. That's number one. And also, coming right behind the last point that Yolanda was making, I know men who have been abused. And the funny thing about it is, ironically, because of their size, you would think that it would be impossible for them to be abused, but it's just the opposite. You know, so it works. It works. You know, it can't work both ways. The other thing I want to say is that I do think the NFL needs to be held to a higher standard, because all things considered, and I'll say it again, all things considered, it appears that the cover up or the conspiracy or the hiding something is more at their feet than at Ray Rice and his wife's feet. I mean, you know, in my opinion, they actually went from boyfriend and girlfriend after the situation to where they got married. And it coincidentally, when the situation first took place in February, I was in Laurel, Maryland, happens to be the same place Yolanda just called from, and I had rushed down there because my daughter-in-law had just been in a critically injured in an accident.
Oh, so boy.
I'm down there, me and my son, praying for my daughter-in-law, and then we hear this nonsense, and at the time, my mind said, and I don't want to be harsh, but my mind said, castrate him. How dare a man do such a thing to his wife? But I hadn't seen the video. Now, I still haven't seen the video, but putting the pieces together, like you said, the only thing that, given the benefit of the doubt, is as a professional athlete, he's paid, his reflexes are part of his talent, his skill set, his skill set of reflexes. And I can, and I've seen, I'm going to be honest with you as a man, and I'm putting this out on the air, your reflexes can get you in trouble sometimes. In the heat of the moment, in a confined space, someone coming at you, and the reflexes could overtake you for a split second. Not justifying it at all,
yeah.
But just, we're all human. So I just want to put that out there. And again, I think the NFL needs to be scrutinized.
Yeah, they've got to be. Hey, Eugene, I hope your daughter is doing well. I just have to jump in because I have a break. But thank you, sir, for the call. May God's grace be on you and your family. Again, we're talking about Ray Rice, the NFL, 866-34-TRUTH. I say the video changes nothing because that's what we knew happened anyway. That's what we knew happened, and he should have been dealt with from day one as if this video was seen. Why the NFL said they didn't see it is very, very mysterious and odd to me, to be candid with you. 866-34-TRUTH. Hey, friends, make sure you check out our special resource offer. It'll bless you and one more person with some much-needed material. Go to my website, Ask Dr. Brown, A-S-K-D-R Brown, AskDrBrown.org. All right? Take advantage of that. If you want to stand with us, partner with us, click on Donate. We will be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown.
your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
We are talking about Ray Rice incident, the NFL. And by the way, this is not to crucify or further embarrass Ray Rice. This is to talk about a right and constructive way to deal with this and hopefully a redemptive way, and also to challenge the NFL as a whole, specifically Roger Goodell and his handling of the situation. If you're not familiar with it, Ray Rice, one of the top running backs in the NFL, his team Baltimore Ravens won the Super Bowl 2 years ago, and he was having some kind of argument with his then-fiancée, now wife. They got on the elevator, and she came at him. He knocked her out with one punch. Next thing you see is he's dragging her out of the elevator. That was the first video we saw, them getting on and then him dragging her out. He said what happened. They said they were moving forward in their lives together, and the NFL went super soft on them. Two-game suspension for Ray Rice, which drew tons of criticism. And then the NFL subsequently said, we're going to crack down. It's going to be more harsh if it happens, because it's happening with other players, as it's happened in the past. And then the video comes out from the elevator. How come the NFL never saw it? Some sources said the NFL had full access to it. They never saw it. Some said they never asked for it. The NFL claims they asked for it, never got it. It's all very suspicious to me that they didn't see this, given the power of the NFL today. Roger Goodell himself, an attorney. What does he make, $20 million a year? I mean, these are high-powered positions, and he knows this brings reproach to the NFL as well. So what happens? He's now suspended indefinitely. His team completely drops him, although the coach said, hey, I'm still standing with him as a person, but, you know, the video changes things. I don't know why the video changes anything. That he knocks her out with one punch. Now we see it. That's no surprise. It's brutal. It's terrible. So obviously the NFL should have dealt with this much more strongly from the beginning. And even if it was a 1 year suspension without pay, I mean, that would be a massive blow to him. And then he and his wife having to get counseling and help and make sure that she's whole after what she's been through. A previous caller suggested this must have been a long-term pattern in their lives. He needs counseling, goes through that, and then you handle it in a redemptive way, and then you encourage them or call on them to get involved in speaking out against domestic violence and community help and things like that. You can handle it like that, right? I mean, why not? So now this is even an uglier mess. And by the way, the previous caller mentioned your reflex set is part of your skills as an athlete. I thought he meant he has to be responsible for his reflexes. He was saying you learn to react quickly. Well, yeah, someone just reminded me of this, but I was thinking about it. If you're a boxer, say a mixed martial artist, and you do it professionally, your hands are like weapons, and you are all the more responsible. Now, Ray Rice is a football player, but you get the point there. 866-34-TRUTH. Angela in Upper Marlboro, Maryland, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Thank you for having me, Dr. Brown. How are you this afternoon?
Doing very well, thanks.
Good. I just wanted to make a brief comment. I do live in the same area or community of Ray Rice and his wife and so on and so forth. And when I first heard about the incident, let me just say this, and being in ministry and being married and being married to a high-powered man, he's a celebrity doctor, and I'm divorced now, but I have encountered a couple of incidences where, you know, some domestic violence did take place in my home, as well as verbal abuse. Let me say this. I'm not going to defend Ray at all in his actions. We all know that it was wrong. We all know that it's wrong to hit each other, to do things that are destructive and have destructive behavior. We all understand that. We know this. However, let me say this. In marriages, in relationships, there are so many things that occur behind closed doors that none of us don't know about unless you live there, unless you see it. And when I first saw this, I looked at my mother and I said, you know what? This ain't the first time she got her tail beat by him. This ain't the first time. Mm. This is not your second time. This ain't your third time. You have been enduring this for a minute.
All right, stay, Angela, stay right there. Stay right there. Hold your thought. As soon as we come back after the break, straight to you and John Delphia. Hold on. I'll be getting to you and others right on the other side of the break. I want to hear more from you, Angela. Stay right there.
Send it, Lord.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Be sure to check out my latest article, An Appeal to Joel and Victoria Osteen, which is going viral, and I really pray that they will read it and take to heart what I have written there. You can read it by going to AskDrBrown, askdrbrown.org, clicking on latest article. We're talking about the Ray Rice incident and the NFL's handling of it. So, Angela in Upper Marlboro, Maryland, back to you. So you were saying what Yolanda, a previous caller, said, that this was not the first time there's been violence between them. What do we do about it? How do these things get handled?
What I was going to say is, from the moment that last incident that we know of, that we saw publicly, that's now been exposed, from that incident right there, if your marriage was to take place the following month, if he gave you that beatdown like that, and it was that to the point where you were unconscious, what she should have said was, let's put this marriage on hold for a second. I'm tired of getting beat like this. We need counseling. If we're going to be together, we need to seek help. I'm not getting married. So what I'm going to say about that is this. Now, I'm going to come from a different perspective. I'm not going to deal with what I call, quote-unquote, and forgive me for saying this, the average Joe Blow. When you deal with people in a different sector of money, and we've never had it before, or you've never encountered it, or the lifestyle is great, it's kind of hard to sometimes turn around. If you've never had it before and you say to yourself, you know, he really does treat me well, you begin to rationalize the things that he does to you, whether it's emotional, verbal abuse. You know what? I'm not leaving this. I'm not leaving this ring he put on my finger. I'm not leaving this house. I got luxury cars. You begin to rationalize and you begin to convince yourself that it's not as bad as I think. But on the other side of the spectrum, let me say this as being a minority woman. We can be somewhat aggressive and somewhat, you know, debative, and we can kind of get in people or men's ears and faces, and we have ways of touching and directing traffic that can provoke them. And we need to sometimes look at both sides of the spectrum and not just what we saw. Now, again, I'm not condoning his actions, but again, she did not have to marry him either, but she did so the following month. And so when I begin to take an analyzation of looking at the African-American community and all the things that we've seen throughout the years, let's go back a little bit. Robin Givens was one of the first ones that was out with Mike Tyson, and she took a lot of beatings. But then all of a sudden, these women want to come out on Oprah. Oh, yeah, he beat me so bad, and he did this to me, and I just want to be an advocate for, you know, domestic violence. Then you turn around and look at her, and let's look at Christian Dome. Juanita Byron Bishop Weeks. He beat me outside the hotel. She's on the front cover of Essence the following month. But, yes, she wanted him back. Then you want to look at Rihanna and Chris Brown. I want to be an advocate for young girls. I want to speak out. But then she gets back with him. Then we look at all this stuff with Edda Lozada. She was on a reality show. This girl had a temper that went to 200. And she would leap across tables, and she beat a girl in the head with a wine bottle. But yet she still married this guy because he gave her a Maserati for her pre-engagement gift, gave her everything she wanted. We have to look at the motivation behind what we take as a beating.
Hey, Angela, I'm sorry, just got to jump in, but what an awesome call, a whole lot that you said with a lot of passion. I want to get to a bunch more callers, but thank you for that, for weighing in candidly, and boy, listing those things one after another, that's pretty intense. But by all means, get help. By all means, say we need counseling. This must be resolved before we move forward. 866-34-TRUTH. Anne in Charlotte, North Carolina, thanks for calling The Line of Fire.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Oh, sorry. The other two ladies that called in are spot on, honestly. I have been in a relationship and know a lot of the problem, too, with this kind of a relationship that you're seeing playing out in the news. And this is something that has not come into play, is that these football players and athletes get paid a lot of money, and they have to stay in shape, and they take steroids. No one has talked about this. I know from experience, from being in the sports field, and also from being married to a man who has anger management issues. He has always had anger management issues. And there have been some incidents that have happened in our past And about 2 years ago, there was an inappropriate relationship that was going on between he and someone else. And I pushed him to try to get him to be honest with me. And one thing led to another over a year span, and I got my tail end beat one night. And he said he will tell you right now, he's a Christian. He prays for us every day. He tried to get me to leave our home. He took all the money away. He did all of these things. But the one evening, whenever it had reached a point that he had evidently decided that he had reached the end of his rope, he punched me in the face, ripped my hair out, tried to smother me with a pillow. Ugh. No one saw this, but they saw what happened. And Dr. Brown, I'm telling you, this man looked at me and told me to prove it. He said, prove it. He said, no one is going to believe you.
Yeah.
Prove it.
And what you're highlighting, and again, we need to do a show and just talk more about domestic violence. We've touched on it in past shows, but we need to devote a lot of time to it and also give a voice to speak to many others, like our previous callers have. Go to your church. You say, yeah, but my husband is the pastor's best friend. If he's a man of God in any way, then he's going to listen to you. If not, go to another pastor. Go to another leader. And if it's that serious, you have to go to the police, do it. But yes, on the one hand, you say, okay, I'm going to overcome evil with good. Maybe your husband's not a believer. If it's male, female, as would be most of the time, he's not a believer, and I'm just praying for him. I understand that, and that's commendable. But if you're talking about real violence and real danger, get help. You say, I'm praying and I feel fine praying. Well, that's between you and God. Otherwise, I'm encouraging you in that way. 866-34-TRUTH. John in East Mano, New York. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Yeah, Dr. Brown, thank you. Excellent show. And Yolanda was right on the head, and all the calls were. I look at it maybe from two perspectives. He committed a crime, and it wasn't on. I mean, he deserves to go to jail for a year, maybe. At the very least, he should be suspended the rest of the year, go for counseling in jail for maybe 60 days, anger counseling. And then when he comes out, be on probation for when he can go to an abusive organization type thing. And if he's allowed back to his team or another team, you know, something like that. It was her. I saw her eye. They showed it off as Entertainment Tonight. And her eye looked really messed up. I mean, that was bad. I'm praying for him as a Christian, of course, and, you know, I hope that things work out.
Got it. Hey, John, thank you for weighing in. And also from the sports perspective, there's some, like Keith Olbermann, who I have disagreed with vehemently in some of his radical gay activist stances, but he is passionately speaking here. In fact, he said, Mr. Goodell is an enabler of men who beat women. His position with the National Football League is no longer tenable. Weighing in very, very strongly. He said, any games played by Baltimore without its executives and the commissioner having been dismissed and without Ray Rice being permanently banned by the National Football League must be fully boycotted by all of us. If not, we become accessories after the fact. Delphia in Reston, Virginia, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
You're welcome. Thank you. I'm Dr. Brown. All the callers have made really good points, and this is a sad kind of tragedy of abuse. I'm just calling to make a couple comments in reference to, I guess, the NFL's response. I think they could have done a lot more, as spoken previously, in reference to investigating more and also maybe seeking counselors or people who have dealt with domestic violence to figure out a way with the best protocol to handle the situation. But one main point that I would like to discuss, I know a lot of people aren't mentioning it, but if people would watch the video again, there's a couple things that are missing on there. In the garage, if people look, when she passed the pole, actually Ray Rice had spit on her first, and as he walked into the elevator and he hit the button, he hits her not once but twice. He hits her soft, he hits her in the face, and then she leans to lunge at him because he hits her in the face, and then he hits her again, which was the knockout blow. It's very sad. As a person who has a degree in psychology, one of the things that I study a lot was abuse. And it's definitely, as Angela was saying, it's a pattern they've had for a very long time. And one of the most stunning things for me was after he had knocked her out, he was so kind of detached that he just kind of stood there and not really having a connection with, I guess, remorse or so. The other thing is, one thing I want to point out, just we as women as a whole, you know, God tells us to put our confidence in the Lord and not put our confidence in other people.
Hey, Delphia, stay right there. We come back. If you could boil down what you want to say as clearly as possible, I want to hear the rest of what you have to say. But thank you for all the points you made. We'll be right back. Stay right there.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
In theory and technically, the NFL has no legal standing to obtain that video. But let's keep in mind that the National Football League has former FBI agents, former police officers, former police chiefs, who are expert investigators, who are well-connected in the world of security, who should be able to obtain that video in the normal course of their work. Even though they have no theoretical basis, they have the technique, they have the personnel, and they have the resources to obtain the video, and it remains very doubtful, I think, to all of us, that they did not have it when the commissioner made his original decision.
Yes, that is CNN legal analyst Lester Munson. I'm not calling Roger Goodell a liar. I'm saying it is highly suspicious that they allegedly did not have access to the video. All right, Delphia in Reston, Virginia, back to you. There was one last point you wanted to make for and about women, please.
Yeah, so the one last point that I think is important, just actually women and men, something that is universal is that I think we all are responsible for our behavior and our decisions in life. And I think everyone, we can love one another. However, I hope that people understand, you know, your issues and problems that you have will never go away. And when you love someone, if you do not unpack your baggage, you're going to end up injuring them. So I just want people to really focus on that. And I think the domestic violence would happen less if people will deal with their stuff and not injure others. But that's just my point, that people, you can love someone
you.
And still hurt them. So, you know, thank you so much, Dr. Brown.
Absolutely. An important point. Thank you, Delphia, for making the point. Let's go to Joyce in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Thanks for calling The Line of Fire. Hello, Joyce.
Hi.
Yes, you're on the air.
I just happened to turn this on, and that's what I'm going through, so that's why I'm calling. And I just want to make a suggestion that people need to really find somebody they can confide in and then take it to court and get some serious help, get counseling. That's the most important thing.
Joyce, why? I'm sorry to hear that you're in the midst of this, and I pray that that God would give grace to turn this around for good. Why wouldn't someone go for help? Are they afraid it's only going to get worse? Do they think it's going to go away? Do they think maybe I deserve this? Why wouldn't they go for help?
No, they think it's going to go away. They're hoping that it's going to go away. That's what I was hoping, that it would just stop eventually. And it didn't. And so since it happened so often and then it escalated, I finally was able to get help with my friends and with my church and with my children. And so now it's going to get resolved. We know what we need to do. And I'm telling people that they need to find somebody they can confide in and then try to get some help. You've got to talk about it. You've got to let it out and you've got to talk about it. But there's help out there. There is help out there. I have so much information now. I mean, I didn't understand, but I do understand now. And so there's help out there for people.
Yeah, I'm sorry you've experienced this, and may God use your example to help others. And absolutely, friends, we've got to do a show, really focus on these things and talk about how people can get help and how those who are on the angry, violent side can get help. Ellen, South Shore, Massachusetts, thanks for calling The Line of Fire.
Yeah, this is Ellen. Hi, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing well, yeah, thank you.
I'm going to say in a nutshell, I agree. I heard earlier, I would say the crime doesn't fit the punishment, and I think it's very severe. I was in a relationship a long time ago. I met this man in college, and it was abusive, physical, not a lot, but it was enough, and it was quite painful. The caller several calls ago, she mentioned how that people stay in this relationship, women do, because of money, because of finances, whatever the case may be, but that's not always true. Neither one of us had any money, and it had to do with low self-esteem for me. I just thought, wow, I couldn't do any better. I didn't deserve any better. People stay in relationships like that because of children and other reasons other than just money or finances or trinkets, whatever. So it has to do with other things. But in case with Mr. Rice, it's really a terrible thing, and I agree that counseling would have... There are other options that the NFL could have taken.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's so many ways.
Yeah,
right, so many ways.
And say, we will not tolerate this, but to say you're out forever, I think it was...
I mean, either that, or if you say that he had... Let's say there was no track record of this. Let's say suspended a year without pay, mandatory counseling, community service for X number of years. That would also send a loud message. And now, of course, many calling for a lifetime ban. Hey, Ellen, thanks for weighing in. Robin in Fairfax, Virginia, we're really short on time, but share your thoughts quickly if you can.
Yes, thank you, Dr. Brown. My thought, I guess, has already been slightly... repeated because I was off the air as of 1:30 or 2:30, but in our area. My thought was just that I know you've heard of restorative justice and the idea that, you know, talk about dropping the ball. You know, I too have been a survivor of domestic violence in different aspects, whether it was domestic or just random violence. And what I really feel for now is the couple themselves just being sort of dropped like this, that it would be nice if there is no set precedent for how the NFL would deal with this kind of situation in the future. If they could, like you just mentioned, make sort of a way for them to get counseling, maybe provide that or pay for that, or if that's not needed. But, you know, I just...
Oh, yeah. Hopefully there is some kind of reaching out the NFL is doing. I mean, right now the NFL officially is just... stepping back completely and washing their hands of Ray Rice and his wife. And, you know, now that the video's out, it's almost like they feel they can do nothing else after, especially the 2-game suspension. More importantly, they do need to reach out. Hey, I've got to run. I'm at the end of the hour here, and I've got to run. But, yeah, but look, it's one thing to say that they completely blew it with the 2-game suspension, and now they have to act with much more severity. To me, it's completely hypocritical that they're doing that now, because we know what happened on the elevator. He knocked her out. Okay, now you're seeing it, but what did you think it looked like? You think he gave her a kiss on the forehead and she was knocked out? No, he punched her in the face. She was knocked out, and she was unconscious, dragged out unconscious, and lay there unconscious. So the NFL blew it initially. Now, okay, we completely distance ourselves. Come on. Now, sure, especially if Ray Rice came and was cooperative, as everyone said, then try to help this couple as well and make it known that you're trying to do that. Hey, Robin, thank you for the comments and the call. Remember to read my latest article by going to Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. Please go there, check on my appeal to Joel and Victoria Osteen, and check out our monthly resource or weekly resource. It's a special offer that'll really bless you and someone else, a really important book that we want to get in your hands. My bottom line today, the Ray Rice incident reminds us that there is a plague of domestic violence in America. I encourage those in the midst of it to cry out and look for help. You are really going to find this dialogue I had with a young woman who identifies as lesbian. You're really going to find this dialogue eye-opening and helpful.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Hey friends, welcome to the Line of Fire broadcast. I am delighted to be with you today. Just had a very intense hour of broadcasting as we talked about domestic violence, specifically about the Ray Rice incident and how the NFL has handled that. Got calls from quite a few women, a number of women who themselves had been physically abused and talked about this. I encourage you to listen to that later today by going to AskDrBrown.org, clicking on Latest Audio. Tomorrow, I have prepared a special broadcast, a very special broadcast about 9/11. It is sobering, but it is redemptive, and it is full of hope. And I do want to talk to you about that tomorrow. And then, God willing, live from Kansas City on Friday, you've got questions, we've got answers, and we have some special guests. I will be in Singapore broadcasting live from Singapore over a two-week period, but I've got some special exciting guests that I will be bringing on the air for you, and I think you'll be blessed, and I'm going to tell you in advance, my dear friend Scott Volk, one of my closest friends in the world, he's joined me on the air a number of times, and folks have said, hey, you know, maybe he should guest host for you one day. Well, he's going to do it for us. We're also going to hear from Frank Turek and from Alex McFarlane. So we've got some special guests, and of course, me. Coming your way live from Singapore. In a little while, I'm going to speak with Pierre Bynum, who is a chaplain and prayer director with the Family Research Council, about a really special event coming up, really special event coming up this Sunday night. You don't want to miss it. It's if you're anywhere in Greater Charlotte, I want to encourage you to join everyone at First Baptist Church for a very special event. We'll tell you about that in a little while. But when I was in Des Moines, Iowa, did a talk on Sunday night about can you be gay and Christian. And at the end of it, we had open mic Q&A. I'm going to take you into that open mic Q&A with interaction I had with a 21-year-old woman who identified as a lesbian. But before we do that, Pierre Bynum is the chaplain and national prayer director for the Family Research Council, working with FRC's president, Tony Perkins. Pierre, we're going to have to continue after the break, but tell us first, just let's get the details. And then after the break, we'll come back and talk more. What's happening this Sunday night in Charlotte?
This Sunday, the Family Research Council and several other great organizations that are aligned with us are putting on an unusual production at the First Baptist Church in Charlotte called Star Spangled Sunday. And, of course, this is a celebration of the 14th of the month, which is the 200th anniversary of the Star Spangled Banner and the turning point of the War of 1812 and the day that Fort McHenry was saved as a result of citizen action and the intervention of Almighty God.
All right. And it's going to be what time Sunday?
It's going to be at 7 p.m. at First Baptist Church. And it's also going to be webcast nationally.
All right. So tell you what, when we come back, I just want to I don't want you to give a spoiler and tell us all the details, but I just want to probe this with you for a minute and find out, because you started to share some things with me, and I started looking into it. This is wild. This is stuff you never knew about the Star Spangled Banner.
God of light, hear our cry. Send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks so much for joining us on The Line of Fire. Before I take you into some fascinating dialogue I had this past Sunday night in Des Moines, Iowa, some of you were there, so shout out to all of you who were there. Before we get to that, I just want to talk a little bit more with Pierre Bynum from Family Research Council. Pierre, so this event is going to be webcast nationally or internationally, and it's going to be based in Charlotte. So anyone in Charlotte, North Carolina, Sunday night, this is at First Baptist Church, 7 p.m., and admission is free. Is that correct?
Admission's free.
And to watch
and
the webcast...
The webcast, you can find the times at starspangledsunday.com. Starspangledsunday.com. And we have different times for the West Coast and beyond so that people can enjoy the whole thing at a time that's convenient for them.
All right. So I just want you to give us a teaser here and not give away some of the punchline, but what's the big deal? I mean, Star Spangled Banner, okay, we sing this. I mean, what's the big deal? What's so exciting about this?
Well, there are many things that are exciting about it, and I told you one that I knew was one you were likely not to have known. The sad thing is that the majority of Americans are unfamiliar with the War of 1812 or the circumstances of the Star Spangled Banner. But Washington, D.C. had been completely torched by the British. The British were trying to take back our country after having lost the war for independence to us. And we made an excursion into Canada, and Britain took the side of Canada and brought their whole fleet over to the United States, as well as a grand army. They had 12,000 men there in Maryland. And we, a bunch of citizen militia, rose to the occasion and defeated. That was the turning point of the War of 1812, that very night that the Star-Spangled Banner was written. Fort McHenry in Baltimore was under assault. The whole fleet had come up the Chesapeake Bay to attempt to get into Baltimore. The businessmen, merchants in Baltimore sank their ships to serve as a barrier to keep the British Navy from getting in. And they sat there and assaulted with the full power of their boat cannon on Fort McHenry. And that was the setting of the Star-Spangled Banner.
And what kind of impact have you seen on those who've watched the production in advance or seen the story? How's it impacted them?
Well, again, as I shared, and this is embarrassing to me, I didn't know the details of the story I told you, and I hate to give the details of that because that is kind of...
No. That's why people have to tune in or show up at First Baptist in Charlotte Sunday night. But what kind of impact has it had when people have gotten the story?
It's stirring because America was in a very, very dark night of the soul there. The British were successful in torching Washington, D.C. They had destroyed the White House. They'd burned the White House. They had burned the Capitol and marched on up to Baltimore to take Baltimore. And had they taken Baltimore, which was our strongest harbor at the time, they would have won the war. But that's why this was so important. It was citizen people. And why is it important to us today? Because of what's happening in our country right now, the threats that we're facing that are probably the greatest in our lifetime. And the point I want you to know is that God intervened, and that's where you've got to tune in and watch the program to hear just the miraculous intervention of God, almost as he has miraculously intervened in every war that we've had to fight, where we have prevailed. God is our truly our Savior. And by the way, I wanted, just while I've got you here, to read the fourth stanza of the Star Spangled Banner, which is not normally sung.
Okay.
But, oh, thus be it. This was, again, Francis Scott Key, who wrote this as a poem. He didn't sing it as a song, and it was later turned into a song. Oh, thus be it ever, when free men shall stand between their loved home and the war's desolation. Blessed with victory and peace, may the heavens rescued land praise the power that hath made and preserved us a nation. Then conquer we must when our cause is just, and this be our motto, in God is our trust, and the star-spangled banner in triumph shall wave for the land of the free and the home of the brave. We owe it all to God.
Yeah, and Pierre, you know, not just that we don't sing it, I'm trying to remember if I've heard that before or when I've actually heard that or read that. Please give us the website one more time.
It's starspangledsunday.com.
All right, great. Starspangledsunday.com, of course, one word, and that'll give you times to watch it if you're not in the greater Charlotte area. Thanks so much, brother. May the blessing and grace of the Lord be upon you and FRC. Also, if you're anywhere near Greensboro, North Carolina, get as many non-believing or backslidden friends as you can find and bring them out to the Reinhard Bonnke USA Gospel Crusade, Greensboro, North Carolina. Here's a man who's preached to crowds over 2 million people at a single time. Here's a man who's seen literally tens of millions of Africans make professions of faith in Jesus. He will preach a clear gospel message, redemption from sin through the blood of the cross. That is going to be Friday night, September 12th, and Saturday night, September 13th. And I'll tell you what, let me just tell you exactly where it's going to be in Greensboro. It's the Greensboro Coliseum, all right? Greensboro Coliseum, that is 921 West Lee Street, Greensboro Coliseum. 7 o'clock Friday night, Saturday night, and then if you're in Charlotte area, go over to First Baptist Church on Sunday night. All right. Sunday night, this past Sunday night, I was in Des Moines, Iowa, gave a talk on Can You Be Gay and Christian, how to open my Q&A afterwards, and a young woman came to the mic, clip number 6. This is what she had to say.
First of all, I want to start off by saying I do not feel like I struggle with my homosexuality, but I do want to ask you, do you think that every sin is equal, like no sin is greater than another?
All right. Very open. She didn't hide how she identifies herself, and it was obvious in my mind why she was asking. In other words, is homosexual practice worse than any other sin? Here's how I answered clip number 7.
Yes and no. I'll explain. And thanks for being so open. And also, thanks for sitting there without a single displeased look on your face the entire time that I talked. I appreciate that. If you had it, I didn't spot it. So thank you. Okay, on the one hand, sin is sin. In other words, disobedience to God is disobedience, right?
Correct.
On the other hand, When in the Bible, when Pilate hands Jesus over to be crucified, he was acting with his authority, but others acted outside of the authority, and Jesus said they're committing the greater sin. So certainly murder is far worse than having a lousy attitude towards someone. It's wrong if I call someone an ugly name. It's far more wrong if I now steal from them and burn their house. So certain sins are more severe than others. As far as homosexual practice, that's considered to be very wrong because it's such a fundamental violation of what God ordained for us in the way he made us and created us. But otherwise, sin is sin, and Jesus died equally for all sin. And if we were going to sit down, if we were on a plane and talking for hours, if you brought the subject up, great. Otherwise, I'd be more focused on your relationship with God and coming to know him personally. That would be the greater focus.
All right, and here's the question that she asked me, clip number 8.
Do you think you are judgmental at all when it comes to stuff like that? I mean, I was listening to you, and you don't seem like it. You seem like you have thoughts both ways, you know, but it's always about following God first. Everyone's a sinner, right? So who are we to say anything about gay people at all? You know, we're not God. We're not here to judge. We're here to bring people closer to God. Mm-hmm. And I feel like That's why homosexual people have such problems with church, is because I feel like not everyone's judgmental, but some people are, and there's no reason to be. Everyone sins. Everyone's a sinner, and it always will be. So what makes anyone different? You know, what makes a heterosexual person different than a homosexual? Because at the end of the day, we're all sinners.
Ah, a great question. I'll play my response when we come back. And if you want to call, if you've got a question or a comment you want to weigh in on this subject that the young woman is talking about after our Can You Be Gay and Christian lecture, 866-34-TRUTH. I'll give my answer to that. Hey, if we all sin, we're not supposed to be judgmental. Why single out homosexual practice?
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to the Line of Fire. We're taking you into the live Q&A that took place at Open Bible Church Sunday night in Des Moines. Again, shout out to all of you who were there. If you're listening right now on KTIA FM 99.3, welcome to the broadcast. 866-34-TRUTH. So, a young lady after my talk, Can You Be Gay and Christian? First said she's open about her homosexuality. She then one knows one sin worse than another. And then she said she didn't feel I was judgmental, but she wondered if I thought it was judgmental about these things. And since we're all sinners at the end of the day, then why pick out this sin? Why draw attention to it? So here's my response to her question, clip number 9.
All right, so a few specific questions there, and thanks for hearing my heart as I've spoken and recognizing it. Number one, in terms of like a superiority thing or I'm better than someone or any judgmentalism, no, the thought never occurs to me. And you have to understand the environment I was raised in. I started playing organ when I was 5 and a half. My sister was about 9, and our first organ teacher was an openly gay man. And he would come with his partner, who was a hairdresser, interestingly enough, and they would come and have dinner at our home. This was several years of my life growing up, so we knew they were different. You know, my sister and I knew there was something different. I remember we went to their apartment and visited them in New York City once. That's the environment I was raised in. So, like homophobia or being in churches, you know, God hates gays. I can't relate to that at all. But would you say that if we lived in the days of slavery and we said we need to do something about this because the slave trade is wrong, would that be judgmental or would that be making a good judgment?
All right, so I asked her that question and we begin to interact further about it. Clip number 10.
That would be making a good judgment.
Got it. Because Jesus says in John 7:24, stop judging by outward appearances and make righteous judgments. So if we didn't have righteous judgments, the world would fall apart. If someone steals money from you and takes advantage of you, and then you take that person to court, and the court says, hey, everybody has a bad day. No, there's no justice in the world then. When Jesus said don't judge, what he meant was this: don't be judgmental, don't be hypocritical in your judgment, and don't be superficial, but judge righteously. When it comes to within the church, those who claim to be following Jesus, Paul says in 1 Corinthians 5, judge those in your midst. In other words, if someone says, I'm a follower of Jesus, and a guy has left his wife, and he's now sleeping with another woman, and he's coming to church and saying, hey, I'm praising the Lord, and everything's fine, we're supposed to judge that. We're to call that person to repent, and if they don't repent, we're actually to shun them, to put them out of our fellowship. So we're called to make righteous judgments, but not to be judgmental.
It's amazing how many people, that's the one verse in the Bible they know. Jesus said, don't judge. Again, what he was saying was, don't be hypocritical in your judgment. Don't be superficial in your judgment. Don't condemn. And then when you examine your own life first, you can then judge accurately and help the other person. And Jesus says in John 7:24, don't judge by outward appearance, make righteous judgment. And Paul says within the body we are to judge. And where would the world be if there was no judgment, no justice? Judgmentalism, bad, but justice, righteous judgment, we need it. Let's continue clip number 11.
Here's the other aspect to it. I recognize that adultery is wrong, and by God's grace, I don't practice adultery. I recognize that sexual immorality before I was married, to sleep with a woman before I was married, that was sin, right? By God's grace, I didn't practice that. I was a heavy drug user. I stole money from my own father. I broke into houses. I did all kinds of things. That's not who I am anymore. So I'm a changed person. I'm not perfect, but I don't live in that way anymore. When Paul talks about practicing homosexuals, he says, that's what you used to be. So in other words, if we truly come to Jesus, there will be fundamental changes in our behavior. And if there are not fundamental changes in our behavior, we're not really saved. We don't really know the Lord. Jesus said in Matthew 7:21, not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but only those who do the will of my Father. So if I claim to be a follower of Jesus and I'm stealing money from the government through my taxes, and I'm lying to people on my radio show to raise money, and I'm taking money from the poor to build some palace or something like that, you'd have every right to call me a hypocrite because you expect different behavior. So we actually do live differently. I am actually a former sinner, now a saint. You say, what does that mean? What it means is sin is no longer the habit of my life. I don't get online and download pornography. It's available, but it's wrong, so I don't do it. Have I ever been tempted? Of course. Who hasn't been tempted to do wrong? Have I fallen short in the course of a day? Sure. I'm sure today I fell short in certain ways, but that's not the pattern of my life. So a sinner is someone, this is the pattern of their lives, and this is how they live. That's why in the New Testament we're called saints, holy ones, because we're changed people.
And friend, you may be struggling deeply in a different area of your life. To be tempted is not a sin. To say, but look, I'm not like you. I'm not attracted to the opposite sex. That's not a sin. The sin is to give place to things and act on them, even in the midst of a, quote, loving relationship. It is sin if it is in violation of God's word and God's ways. And it's ultimately not for our good either. I have a resource that would be of so much help to you, and I want you to get a copy and have a copy to give to someone else. I'm speaking of my book, Can You Be Gay and Christian? If you've read the book, can I encourage you to go to Amazon.com, even if you bought it elsewhere, but if you've read the book, go to Amazon.com and post a review. We'll sometimes have people post nasty reviews who haven't read the book or real critics, but overwhelmingly people are thrilled and super positive, but it helps other readers. This is not a personal boost thing. This is a way to help others when they see the reviews. They go, oh, I want to get that book. I want to look at it. If you haven't gotten the book, when you buy one copy today, we'll give you the second copy at half price, $25 postage paid. Can You Be Gay and Christian? You say, those sodomites, man, they're all just going to burn in hell. Read the book because God wants you to get a heart of compassion and to understand the struggles that those have, many people have gone through, especially those who want to serve the Lord, and to their shock, they find themselves same-sex attracted as they're growing up. I never experienced this in my own life, but I can say I've listened to enough, I've prayed enough, I've read enough to really understand some of the heart and pain and share that with you in the book. You say, yeah, but look, love is love. I mean, everyone, God just loves everybody. You need to read the book because grace and truth go hand in hand. So, Can You Be Gay and Christian? Buy one copy, second copy, half price, $25 postage paid. Call now, 1-800-278-9978. Get a few copies if you like. Help with a donation to help others. 1-800-278-9978. Once more, that's 1-800-278-9978. Or if it's easier for you, just go to my website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. You can order right on the homepage. We'll be back with your calls and some more audio clips.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, we are going to continue playing audio clips from my dialogue with a young woman who identified as homosexual. Her words that she wasn't struggling with her homosexuality. In other words, she was saying this, she's embraced this. But very interesting as it goes on. I was so pleased we were able to have that interaction. So pleased for the church, Pastor Spencer there opening his doors and really saying, hey, we've got to reach out. They went to the local university and reached out there. And so glad to see an atmosphere of love and making everyone know, hey, whoever you are, whatever's going on in your life, whatever your background, you are loved here because we are followers of Jesus. We'll get back to the dialogue in a moment. First to the phones, Lisa, well, David in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, thanks for holding. You're on the air.
Are you talking to me, Dr. Brown?
If you are David in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, I am talking to you.
Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon.
It's a pleasure to talk to you, Doctor. I want to thank you so much for teaching us how to have disagreement and to be gentle and with respect. But you threw me off when you told the young lady when she asked was sin sin, and you said yes and no. So could you please elaborate, because you said the homosexuality is such a fundamental sin, but also is when a man cheats on a woman, that's a covenant directly with God.
Yes, sir.
And I don't hear the same type of retribution that a lot of people say when somebody cheats on a spouse than when a homosexuality. It looks like homosexuality is the number one sin in this land, and I don't think it is.
Great, great point, David, and thank you so much for addressing it, and thanks for the kind words. First, the basic question she was asking is one sin greater than another? And my answer was yes and no. I said no in that all sin is sin and separates us from God. I said yes, and I gave the example with Pilate when he said that the Jewish leaders who handed Jesus over to Pilate committed a greater sin. Pilate sinned within his authority. These leaders went beyond their authority. So it would be a worse sin to commit adultery physically against your wife or against my wife than to just one time for 10 seconds be slightly flirtatious with someone saying, hey, that was wrong. It'd be far worse to act the thing out and live it out. For many years, David, when I preached about sexual purity and sexual sin, 99% of it dealt with heterosexual sin. That's my life, and that's most of the people in the world, and that's most of what I dealt with, you know, and adultery, pornography, sexual purity, no fault, divorce. So these have been topics of importance for many years. And absolutely, Paul puts fornication, drunkenness, covetousness, homosexual practice, adultery, all in the same category. The reason that homosexuality is addressed is because it's knocking at our door everywhere. It's because gay is now supposedly the new black, and this is the new civil rights movement. It's because in every state, gay activists are trying to redefine marriage and overturn the will of the people. It's because the media blasts us with it day and night. It's because Michael Sam comes out as gay, and his next thing, he's a national celebrity, and his picture kissing his boyfriend is everywhere to be seen. Jason Collins comes out, and he's the new Jackie Robinson. It's pervasive in the school system. Homosexual activism has become the principal threat to religious freedom and freedom of speech and conscience in America. So absolutely, I could say the very same things about adultery in terms of a fundamental violation. And I could even say they're homosexual men or women that love each other and are committed to each other, and they're not violating covenant the way an adulterer is. The reason we're talking about it is only because of homosexual activism. It's everywhere. It's knocking at our doors. In other words, the rain is coming in and we're patching the roof. But thank you for the call. And 100%, I agree with the point you're making about the severity of adultery.
Fire we want, for fire we please. Stand in the fire.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I have heard in the church only negative things about people who were homosexual, and there was no sort of redemptive message on the issue.
Yeah, that is from GodLovesHomosexuals.com, and it's a website that I would encourage you to visit and check out. 866-34-TRUTH. All right, let's go back to my dialogue from Sunday night in Des Moines, Iowa, talking to a young woman, a self-identified lesbian, but someone who's talking about wanting to do the will of God. Clip number 12.
So here's the difference. We are not having divorce pride parades. We are not having adultery pride parades. We're not having pornography pride parades, but we're having gay pride parades. And gay activism is very eager to change the definition of marriage and change things in society. So we have to stand up. It's not that the reason I spend so much time on this is not because it's more major than any other issue, but because it's everywhere in society. It's on TV. It's in the schools. It's in the courts. So it's knocking at our door. We have to address it. And then I agree 100%, though, that many churches have been insensitive. Many churches have just looked at this as if it's just a choice and you just chose to be like that and just change. And that's hurt a lot of people. And I apologize on behalf of many churches and leaders for driving folks away that are same-sex attracted or struggle. I apologize. And if you've ever been hurt, I apologize from my heart for anything that any other Christians did to you. From the heart.
Again, the question is, and it ties in with the great question that David asked from Winston-Salem, why do we address this so much? I didn't go looking for this. I have enough controversy as a Jewish follower of Jesus. I have enough controversies when wanting to see revival and renewal in the church. And I could give myself fully to any one of a number of things that God has called me to. When he burdened me about this, it was the calling to reach out and resist 10 years ago. Reach out to gays and lesbians with compassion, resist gay activism with courage. And this is knocking at our door. But here's the positive. There are many who struggle with same-sex attraction, who struggled secretly, and they didn't know where to go. And some of them thought, God must hate me. And often church leaders were insensitive. And maybe while being upset about gay activism, we now drive away someone in our own midst who's struggling or is really seeking and is trying to resolve this. Because as far as they know, this is who they are to the core of their being. And didn't God make them like that? So they're struggling. When I issued that apology, I did have to hold back tears because I do care deeply. And thankfully, anyone that really does spend time with me with an open heart knows that I care deeply. Now the dialogue continues. Clip number 13.
If you came to the conclusion that Jesus had something better for you than living as a lesbian or being with another woman, and that he said to you, you can't live like this if you want to please me. He's not saying that you have the ability to just snap your fingers and change attraction and desire, but you can change behavior. If you found out that God didn't want you in a lesbian relationship and that he was calling you to serve him and be with him, would you say, all right, I just want what you want, God. I want to serve you. If you became sure that God was against homosexual practice, would you follow him or would you choose homosexual practice first?
I would have to be celibate, but I feel I would be celibate, but I feel like at the end of the day, me being gay isn't different than any other sin. I feel that strongly.
All right. Now, isn't that interesting? Very interesting as the dialogue continued. Now, by the way, she said that she had not been personally hurt by the church, which was good to hear because many have been, but she said she had not been. Just two more clips, and then I want to go to your calls. Clip number 14.
Do you feel it's a sin? Not being gay, but practicing homosexuality. You feel it's a sin?
It says it in the Bible.
Okay.
Point blank, period. Yeah, it says
right.
It. But a lot of things are considered sins in the Bible. So, you know,
But do we do them or do we ask God to help us not to do them?
We ask God to not help us do them, but is anyone in this room not a sinner?
Ah, so that's what it comes down to. Interestingly, she says she knows homosexual practice is sin, but is anyone not a sinner? So since we all sin, I mean, that's her perspective, then this is just part of who she is. So everybody does things wrong. We all fall short, right? So that's just the reality. And that is the perspective of many. Last clip, number 15.
What you're saying is this. Nobody's perfect, therefore I'm going to do what I want to do. No, what we're all saying is, Lord, we want to please you. In other words, if I fall short, if I sin, it's not what I want to do. And I tell the Lord I'm sorry, and I turn away from it, right? Mm-hmm. If I saw my, you know, I'm in an airport and some attractive gal walks past and I glance at her, Lord, why, that's not who I am. That's not who I'm not going to pick up some magazine and look at her to follow that woman, because that's not who I am. That's contrary to what I want to do. What you're saying is, no, I want to do what I want to do. And that's the biggest issue. If you want to follow Jesus, you have to deny yourself and take up the cross and follow him. And if you start there, don't worry about long-term marriage. Don't worry about anything else. Just say, okay, I know this is wrong, and I want to please you. And start following him like that. You'll be amazed at what will happen. Your mindset will change. Your attitude will change. You get so filled with joy in God's life that everything will change. And then you may even find desires rising up in you that you never had before. And God will do what's best for you. But what you just have to say is, Lord, I just want to please you, and I'm not going to make any excuses. And if you do, you do well, and you'll have a whole lot of people around you that'll help you.
Ah, and there is actually one more clip. You hear the words of encouragement. And for those who are wondering, how do you address these things? This is some of the answer. Clip number 16.
I don't think my decision will ever change, but I think that my job is to spread the word of God and bring other people to him. And that's my biggest worry. That's my biggest thing I want to accomplish. So I'm not really worried about the homosexuality part as much. But I do think about it. I do have questions. But I appreciate it, and thank you for coming tonight.
Thank you. May I ask how old you are?
21.
21. Awesome. And listen, just think about this. How can you tell people, follow God, but don't do what I do? How can you tell people, follow God and obey him, but don't follow my example because I don't obey him because I want to do what I do? If that's your mission, and I believe that God would have put that in your heart, that's commendable, then what you need to do is think of this. Romans, the 12th chapter, Paul says, offer your body as living sacrifices. That means my whole life I just put on the altar, and now it belongs to God. So when you get home, just when you're alone, if you just say, God, I give you my whole life, unconditionally, no holds barred, I give myself completely to you, and I want you to bless my life. If you really mean it, you'll experience a transformation of life in many ways. And when we next chat, the conversation will be a little different. So you don't have to respond to me. It's a personal thing. But I just want to encourage you, when you get home, just alone, between you and God, can you unconditionally say, I'm yours? I just give myself to you, and I just want to please you. If you really mean that from the heart, he'll help you. All right?
Yep. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Would you take a moment and just ask the Lord to touch that young woman? Ask the Lord to so flood her with his love, so flood her with his calling and purpose for her, so flood her with conviction of sin and with hope for righteousness, that she would really call out to the Lord and be saved and transformed. You know what? Before I get to the calls, I don't want to get interrupted by a break. Let's just go back to this clip from GodLovesHomosexuals.com. Joey, clip number 18. I think it's important to end with this before we leave this subject.
I wish I could say that, you know, in that moment that I prayed a prayer and asked Jesus to forgive me of my sins and be my Savior, that somehow he also magically, you know, dissolved my homosexual orientation. And he did not do that. But he gave me the grace to walk through that struggle and to walk it out.
Yes. And that is the great bottom line. I saw a quote from a testimony of a woman named Miranda Pettit, who walked away from lesbianism 10 years ago. And she said, God is more interested in equipping us for the journey than he is in removing our struggles. He wants our obedience, dependence, and devotion. Ultimately, he wants our hearts. He will supply all that we need to daily deny ourselves, take up our cross, and follow him. Amen. So be it. All right, we're going to come right back, get your calls and reflections. Remember to check out the special resource offer, totally relevant to every word of this broadcast, Can You Be Gay and Christian? If you get one copy, you get the second copy, 50% off. Just go to askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org. Remember to click on latest article when you're there as well.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You know, I assumed that I was born this way, but once I unpacked my story and realized that there were some real reasons that were causing me to have the belief system that I had about sexuality, about men, and about women, it really helped me to be able to address it. It wasn't like, no longer it was based on assumptions. There was some anecdotal evidence of why I embraced a gay identity.
Yeah, and listen, I believe people's stories when they say, look, I had a great upbringing, and I don't know why I'm same-sex attracted, and great relationship with my parents, is never abused. I believe their stories, and I believe the stories of the many who have different stories and who were abused or who had other issues that they can now unpack and recognize. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Steve. And is it Fuqua Verena? I always forget how to pronounce this in North Carolina.
You got it. Fuqua.
Go ahead.
Hey, great that you're discussing this, and I was not aware of your book, but it's a very important subject, and I had a couple questions for you, a thought and a couple questions. The first thing is, I work with students, and it's interesting to me how students that, you know, attend and maybe even interact tend to compartmentalize sexuality, their behavior, and Christianity. And when the subject of homosexuality comes up, it's a different type of stance that not all students, but a lot of students have. It's just, you know, it's like, you know, unclean. They don't want to get too close to it. So I think it's a great subject. Now, to my question for you is, my family and I have had opportunities to get close to couples that are same-sex couples, and they are very aware of the fact that we're Christian and that, you know, we hold to the Bible. But first question that I have for you is regarding some of their life choices, in that they are, you know, one couple is in the process of adopting a child. And with that, it's kind of an awkward conversation. The way I kind of responded is like, wow, you must be really excited. Wow, your life is really going to change. You know, ask questions about when, you know, when's it all happening? But I've been hesitant to say, wow, that's, you know, to kind of.
To be honest, it's a very uncomfortable situation, because you want to be loving and you want to be supporting. And they probably are excited about this, but I would not be able personally to give any of the wows
and look, there may be
a same-sex couple listening right now. You say, Mike Brown, that is positively hateful. Please understand. I want to see that kid have a mom and a dad. I don't want to see that kid deprived of either a mom or a dad. And you may be caring for that person, but the best mom in the world is not a dad, and the best dad in the world is not a mom. And it's not hateful to say that. So I would just listen, and you don't have to respond to everything. It's not your place to say, well, that's a wicked thing to do, and you obviously don't love that kid, and you know that. That wouldn't be in your heart to do. But Steve, that's what I would say, that you keep befriending, you keep loving, you keep reaching out. If there's an adopted kid and your kids, you know, you have kids same age, play with that kid, great, keep doing that, and pray that the Holy Spirit would really work in their hearts and focus on them coming to Jesus. If they say, well, we love Jesus and he blesses our relationship, then you know, read my book, Can You Be Gay and Christian, and see if they'll read it. But relational, really caring love, getting involved in the lives is the very best thing. And obviously, you're not going to celebrate the adoption the way they would. I'm sure you have more questions, but I got to run. Thank you, sir, for the call. Let's go to Miguel in South Holland, Illinois. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Good day, Dr. Brown. It's a pleasure speaking with you. I will try to read or digest what I'm saying and ask a question at the end. In regards to judgment, and I think you covered it very well, there's too many scriptures in 1 Corinthians 6, 2, 3, and 4, 5, and 10, 15 that says the saints are to judge righteously. Even the angels will judge. So when people say that, it's like a red flag to me, indicating that they want to stay where they're at, whether it's in their sin or in their belief system. The other thing that the gentleman caller said, that, you know, he looked at adultery, and he doesn't hear that much about adultery versus homosexuality. And I would say to that gentleman, the thing is that Christians are not promoting or affirming adultery or fornication, but the gay lesbian community within the church are affirming it, and that's what they want. And I would point them to 1 Corinthians 6, 15-20, where the Bible speaks exclusively about sinning against the body, that we're bought with a price, and I think we forget that. But and in regards to the young lady that you were speaking with, the constant thing that she says, and a lot of Christians as well as non-believers always say, well, I feel, I think, versus what God says. And I think that's the problem. My question to you, Dr. Brown, if I may.
Yeah, and got to be real quick because we're almost out of time.
Do you feel, and this is off, that this, the gay activism within the church is a clever way that the enemy is distracting the church from the real mission of the church, and that is making disciples and preaching the gospel of Jesus Christ?
Yeah, yes and no. It has been a distraction in that we can just get worked up about what's happening in society and so on. It can be a distraction, or if we get primarily politically involved, but it's absolutely not a distraction if it is part of our awakening to righteousness, part of our recognition of the need to bring the gospel to the culture, because we're in this situation, one reason being we haven't made disciples. So this is a real reminder that we must make disciples, especially with the next generation, and that we must preach a holistic gospel, and that part of the well-being of America is our standing for righteousness. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness. They will be filled. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. They will be filled. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness. Seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness. The kingdom of God is not a matter of meat and drink, but of righteousness, peace, joy, and the Holy Spirit. So Matthew 5, Matthew 6, Romans 14. Read the words of the prophets. Pursuing justice is a righteous thing. Standing for marriage is for the good of the entire nation. So for me, this is part of the gospel. I have a particular commission and burden to do things a certain way. So I'll major on it more. But this is just part of our gospel witness. Thank you, sir, for the call. All right, we are out of time today. But I do want to encourage you to visit the website, askdrbrown.org. And when you are there, check out a special offer we have. When you get one copy of Can You Be Gay and Christian, I can't tell you how essential the reading is, how it'll answer so many questions that come up really on a daily basis in social media and classrooms and on the streets of America and in our churches. Pastors read it, leaders read it, concerned parents, singles, young people. You get one copy, get the second at half price. You can go to askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org to get your copies, or call 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. Once more, that's 1-800-278-9978. My bottom line today, we as followers of Jesus must be more and more equipped to reach out with grace and truth to those who identify as LGBT and to prepare for the coming harvest of souls.